Hello.
Good evening.
Hello, good evening.
You're the first one on.
Oh, okay. I thought I was right.
I wonder if the holiday next week is affecting people, or it's the month.
I don't know. I just know we've had all kind of appointments that were, I don't know now, you just don't see one doctor. You see every doctor for every body part, I think.
No, that's the way it is. Every 3 months, you see the same set of doctors, but it's never one.
I
You never
know.
space them out.
And then tomorrow I have blood work, and it's hard when you're trying to prepare for Shabbat on Thursday and Friday. But just glad I can do it. So that's a blessing in its own.
Exactly. Baruch Hashem. Has the weather cleared up?
Well, we really didn't have much. We, in fact, when I was on the class and we were having the weather from Cindy, that was the only rain we got, an hour and a half. But today it rained all night, off and on, and then this morning my appointment was at 8:30, and it rained from about 7 to 8 real hard, and the streets were really flooded. And in fact, we had to take a different route, to the doctor. Let me see who this is. Well, that's my son. Let me just mute you for a minute.
No problem.
Okay. Okay, I'm back. Tony had picked it up. I was taking a shower, so.
Malka.
Good evening.
Malka. Good evening, Hanok.
Please join me in saying the Anna Bekoah. Anna Bekoah. Good Gedulat Yemincha Tatir Tzerura Aleph Bet Gimel Yutaf Tzadi Kaberinat Amcha Sadbenu Tacharenu Nora Kufre Jayan Suntet Nun Na Gibor Dor Sheyechutcha Kivavat Shalem Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Tavshin Barchem Tacharem Rachame Sidkatcha Tamid Gamlem Bet Tetresh Tzadi Taf Gimel Chasin Kadosh Berov Tufa Nael Adatach Tet Kufbet Tet Nunayan Yachid Geir Lam Papene Zokre Kiddushata Yud Gimel Lamed Pei Zayin Kuf Shavatenu Kabel Ushmati Akatenu Yodea Talumot Shin Kufav Tzadi Yud Taf. The letters of the month of Tammuz, the Taf that created the planet Lavana, the planet we call the moon, and the Chet that created the constellation Sartan, which is the astrological sign of Cancer. We have brought the energy of creation into our space. Now we will separate between the right-hand column and the left-hand column energies of this creation by utilizing the 13 attributes of mercy. Adonai Yohei Wahei Adonai Yohei Wahei El Rachum Vechanun Erech Apayim V'Rav Chesed Be'emet Notse chesed la'alafim, Notse awon wafesha, V'chata'a v'nakei. We're now going to connect to the energy of the year 5777, known as the year of the goat. There are two verses from the Tanakh that helps us connect to this energy. The first is from Lamentations, chapter 3, verse 52, that we will study. And we'll start with a L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud kudsha b'richu ishkin kebit hilu. Urchimud hilu hilu urchimu. L'yachta l'shem yud hei b'vav hei. B'yichuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael. Limud Torah mitzvah, lasok Torah mitzvah, vayhi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maasei yadeinu konanei aleinu maasei yadeinu konaneihu. Tzod tzaduni katzipor, o yevai chinam. When we take the first letters of these five words, we're able to permute them into three other words. Tzatz ki ach, which translates as appear like brothers. When we take the final letters, we're able to permute them into dir yam, which translates as a sea of tenants. The second verse that we study that connects us to the year of the goat is Joshua chapter 23, verse 8. Kim ba Adonai Yohei Wahei Elohechem Tadibaku kasher asitem ad hayom hazeh. Now, for the year 5776, which is the year of the pause, there are also two verses that we study. The first is 2 Chronicles, chapter 29, verse 34. Rakato hanim ha'ilinat velo yachlu lehavshik et kol ha'olot vayachaskum. Achechem alevim ad kelot hamlacha yad yitkadshu hakohanim ki halevim yishrei levav lehitkadesh me hakohanim. There are 25 words in this verse. When we take the first letters, we're able to permute them into 8 names of God. Adonai Yoheiwa La La He Wa 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 Yo La Yo Ala Me Hey 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 Aka A Reka Ha. The second verse connecting to the year of the pause is Isaiah chapter 26, verse 4. Bidhu Ba Adonai Yohewa he ade ad kibia yohe adonai yohewa he tsur olamim. In the year 5775, the year of swallowing death forever is the energy. There are three verses that connect to this. The first is Job, chapter 7, verse 19. Kama lo tishem imeni lo tarpeni ad bili ruki. Next is 1 Samuel, chapter 23, verse 23. Uru, udu, mikol ha-machavoiya, asher yitchabei sham v'shavtem, elai el nachon, v'chalakti itchem, v'chayayim yeshno v'aretz v'chipasti, O Tob, call Alfei Yehuda. And the third verse is from Job also. It's chapter 20, verse 7. Kegelo lanetzach yoved roav yomru ayo. In the year 5774, the year of peace in the Middle East, there is only one verse that connects to this energy, and that's the 2 Samuel chapter 7, verse 10. Wasamti makom lamil Yisrael untati v'shakan tata v'lo yirgaz od v'lo yosifu v'nei avla l'anoto kasher barishona. We're now going to read a verse from the Zohar, from Parashah Yitro. It's Pasuk 29, and this Pasuk has the energy of certainty. Rabbi Abba Amar, Eka Matar, Tanenan, Tiku Chabarihu, Oma Diavid, Leela, Witata Kolaihu. Kishot v'yovada, dikshot v'leid lach mila b'yalma, ivae barnash, v'dahya leya, Mine Alanhaga Beyatalana Dehakulu Ovada Dikshot Inun Wikola Itsterif Bioma. We're now going to connect to the 72 names of God using the pattern we've been using recently. Please scan the first three rows. And the fourth row. Nuta he, he a, yo re ta shi a he, re yo yo wa wa me, la ka be wa shi ro. Washire. Please scan the rest of the chart. And the 72 names from the Tzaddikim in the same pattern, the first three rows, please scan them. And the fourth row, Nu yo he, he shira, yo re ta shia he, re la yo awa me, la yo be wa he re. Please scan the rest of the chart. And the Tzaddikim who chose to leave this day, which is the sixth day of Tammuz, Rabbi Chaim de la Rosa, Rabbi Moshe ben Rabbi Yaakov Shimson of Kosov, Rabbi Shmuel Mahar, Rabbi Yisrael Yaakov Algazi, and the eighth verse of the Ana B'Koach we say in a whisper. Today's class is Advanced Reincarnation. You can find the handout on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix. Row 11, the second half column. When you click on that link, it opens up to a landing page for the classes on advanced reincarnation. Please scroll down to class number 10B, and that opens up to the Zohar about the Saba from Mishpatim. And it's titled The Riddle of the Saba, Part 4. Several of the ideas mentioned above are expressed in the following passages from the Zohar. The following selections are from the English Zohar, that's a five-volume set published by Sonsino. The protagonist is an old man, or a grandfather, because the word Saba means grandfather. Ostensibly a donkey driver, who meets Rabbi Yossi, one of the sages of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's circle, while he was traveling. The donkey driver poses several questions to Rabbi Yossi, who fails to appreciate their true significance. However, his wiser colleague, Rabbi Shia, senses that there is more to the questions than meets the eye. But after probing the matter, they realize that the old man is in fact teaching them some of the deepest secrets of Gilgul, of reincarnation. Along the way, the Zohar also deals with such questions as why do some people never marry? what happens to the soul of a person who dies without having children? And why do innocent children die young? One night, Rabbi Shia and Rabbi Yossi arrive simultaneously in Migdal, Sur. They both planned to lodge the night there and were delighted to see each other. Rabbi Yossi said, "You don't know how happy I am to behold the countenance of the Shekhinah." He was referring to Rabbi Shia, whom he met there unexpectedly. Rabbi Yossi referred to Rabbi Shia as the countenance of the Shekhinah, because the Shekhinah rested upon him constantly. There can be another interpretation of this as well, because the Zohar tells us the Shekhinah always rests when there are three studying Torah. And we know that there was three men who were had come to this location. Continuing to read. "For while I was traveling, I was bothered by an old man, a donkey driver, who plied me with questions the entire way. The first question he asked me was, 'What is the snake that flies through the air and goes about all alone, with an ant resting between its teeth?' He began with union and ended with separation. As explained in the Or Hachama, the meaning behind this question is as follows. What is the lot of a person who did not fulfill the mitzvah to be fruitful and multiply, and did not even marry so that he might have children? When his soul ascends on high, it flutters about in the air, flying through the air, and cannot settle. It does not find a partner. It goes about alone and unproductive, like a snake in this world. For all animals go about in pairs, other than the snake, which travels by itself. When this soul descends again into a body, it does not find a mate and remains alone, with an ant resting between its teeth. Ant refers to the soulmate of that man. She is lost to him, now because he had refused to marry her and fulfill the mitzvah of having children. While he undergoes the Gilgul, the ant, his designated wife, rests between his teeth, for he constantly thinks about her, grinding his teeth in anger at himself for not having married her when he had the opportunity. She, however, finds solace in the other man that she marries. Thus he began with union and ended with separation. Before his soul descended into a body for the first time, his soulmate was announced. He began with union of his soul and that of his designated soulmate. This time, before his soul descended for a second time, no announcement was made, and he ended with separation as half a person, since he descended without his soulmate. The old donkey driver's second question. And what is the eagle that makes her nest in a tree that never was? Her children were stolen away, but not as created beings, for they were created in a place where there is no creation. When they ascend, they descend, and when they descend, they ascend. Two are one, and one is three. Behind this question lies the mystical interpretation of the mitzvah of Yibum, the Levirate marriage. If a man dies without having any children, then his brother, called the Yavam, is obligated by Torah to marry this deceased brother's widow, the Yavama. He perpetuates thereby the name of his deceased brother. The eagle here alludes to the Yavama, who after the death of her husband must make her nest, marry in a tree that never was. A man who is being compared to a tree, who was not intended for her, her Yavam. In fact, had the woman's husband divorced her, she would be forbidden to any of his brothers during his lifetime. Her children were stolen away refers to the children she could theoretically have had with her first husband, who died, and whose soul now enters the child she will have with the Yavam, as will be explained below. But the children she could have born are not created beings that were stolen from her, having never actually been born, but not as created beings, for they were created in a place where there is no creation. And these are the words of the Or HaChama. When they ascend, when the souls of people who die without leaving children ascend from the bodies they occupied, alternatively, when the Yavamand, the Yavama, the brother and the former wife, ascend to become the parents of the deceased, when he is reincarnated as their child, then the soul of the deceased descends into their child. By fulfilling the mitzvah of Yibum and allowing the deceased soul to descend into a body, when they descend in order to perpetuate his name. The Yavam and the Yavama are themselves raised to a higher spiritual level. They ascend. Thus two are one. The deceased and the newborn are one soul, and the one is three. The newborn is endowed with three souls, one from the deceased, another from the Yavam, and a third from the Holy One, blessed be He. The Arizal explains that there is a distinct advantage in Yibum over a regular Gilgul. Namely, a child born to a Yavam and a Yavamatan acquire all three levels of soul, the Nefesh, the Ruach, and the Neshama, in a single lifetime. The old donkey's driver's third question: who is the beautiful maiden without eyes, whose body is concealed and revealed? Who comes out in the morning and disappears during the day? Who is adorned with ornaments that never were? This refers to a pure and unsullied neshama, the maiden, that has merited to ascend to the Garden of Eden as a result of its good deeds, and therefore it is called beautiful. Without eyes, the neshama cannot be seen. However, the neshama is clothed in the lower level of ruach, which is called its body, when compared to the neshama. This level of ruach is concealed. It is not a physical body, and revealed compared with the even more concealed neshama. It is regarded as revealed. It comes out in the morning because after midnight, towards morning, the Holy One, blessed be He, descends with all the souls of the Tzaddikim from the upper aspect of the Garden of Eden. Please note, the Zohar explains elsewhere that there are in general two levels of the Garden of Eden. The Garden of Eden Ha'elyon, the higher Garden of Eden, and the Garden of Eden Ha'takton, the lower Garden of Eden. The difference between them is that the aspect of godliness revealed in the Gan Eden HaTachton, the lower garden, is from the supernal Midot, whereas the aspect of godliness revealed in the upper garden from the supernal Mohin, a far greater illumination. Furthermore, the souls in the Garden of Eden HaTachton, the lower garden, experience the revelation of godliness as the emotional revelation of consummate love and awe, whereas the souls in the upper garden experience the revelation of godliness as profound and inspirational insight into the divine Torah. It is then that the neshamot from the upper aspect of the Garden of Eden clothe themselves in their bodies, which are the ruach, which is called its body, as mentioned above. But when day breaks, the Holy One returns to the upper aspect of the Garden of Eden, and the neshamot go with him. Accordingly, as is said in the Or HaChama, the neshama disappears during the day. The neshama is adorned with ornaments that never were, with the souls of tzaddikim, some of whom are new souls that have never descended into a physical body. Thus, they never were. Although it is not clear that the Arizal is talking about this paragraph of the Zohar, the Arizal explains in the Gates of Reincarnation that after a person has rectified his level of nefesh, he normally must die and be reincarnated in order to begin rectifying his ruach. However, occasionally, if a person has the correct intentions, when he goes to sleep at night, as he places his soul in the hands of Hashem, as the liturgy of the bedtime Shema designates, I deposit my soul, that his nefesh will remain above and only his ruach will descend when he awakes in the morning. Thus it is as if he comes into another Gilgul in a different body. Once he has perfected the level of ruach, then the nefesh can return to the body it was enclosed in originally, so that the ruach will become clothed in the nefesh. Subsequently, if he has perfected his ruach as well, the same process may be repeated. His nefesh and ruach ascend while he is asleep and remain above. When he wakes up in the morning, only the neshama will descend. If he succeeds in rectifying the neshama, well, then the ruach and the nefesh will descend into the same body. The nefesh will become the vehicle for the ruach and his ruach for the neshama, and he will no longer be required to return in Gilgul. Rabbi Yossi continues to tell Rabbi Shia about the strange old man he had met. All these questions he asked me on the way, and it distressed me, but now I can relax. Had we been together, we would have occupied ourselves with Torah discussions instead of other nonsensical matters. And Rabbi Shia asked this old man, "Do you know anything about him?" And he replied, "This I know, his chatter is worthless, for had he known anything, he would have been discussing Torah, and the journey would not have been wasted." Rabbi Shia said, "Is the donkey driver here? Sometimes those apparently empty-headed fellows can turn out to be a golden bell. Here he is preparing food for his donkey. They called him over, and he came before them. He said to them, 'Now two are three, and three are as one. The two of them, Rabbi Yossi and the donkey driver, had now become a group of three, together with Rabbi Shia, and all three were united as one in their common quest to learn Torah. But Rabbi Yossi still did not grasp the true nature of the old man's comments. And he said to Rabbi Shia, "Didn't I tell you that all of his words are meaningless and idle chatter?" The old man sat down before them and said, "Rabbis, only recently I became a donkey driver. I was not always a donkey driver, but I have one young son whom I sent to school. I want him to occupy himself with Torah. And so when I meet a rabbi on my travels, I try to act as his donkey driver. Today I thought I would hear some novel Torah insights, but I heard nothing." The assumption is that it was he who had tried to learn Torah from the rabbi. However, as we will see shortly, the donkey driver intended to teach the rabbi secrets of the Torah. Rabbi Yitzhak Luria comments on the above piece. "Know that the souls of other tzaddikim descend from that world, from that higher world, to reveal secrets of the Torah to the righteous and the very pious. This is the esoteric explanation of the Mishnah. All those who occupy themselves with Torah for its own sake are worthy of many things. They reveal the secrets of the Torah to him." Understand that it does not state the secrets of the Torah are revealed to him, but rather they reveal the secrets of the tzaddik soul. But rather, they reveal the secrets of the Torah to him via the souls of the other tzaddikim. Now, the manner in which the tzaddik soul is revealed to a person in order to divulge to him Torah secrets is this. There is no neshama that does not have a lubush, a garment, called his cloak or its rabbinical attire, in the case of a scholar. This garment is woven from mitzvot that a person fulfills, just as the angels who appeared to Abraham came clothed in a body. So too the souls of tzaddikim clothe themselves in a rabbinical garment and appear to a person in order to teach him secrets of the Torah. Depending on the level of this recipient has reached, the tzaddik's neshama from Briah, or his ruach from Yetzirah, or his nefesh from Asiyah will reveal the secrets of Torah to the person who comes from his soul root. When only the level of nefesh of the tzaddik becomes clothed in a garment, then it is revealed as a donkey driver. Know, however, that it is impossible to the soul of any tzaddik to clothe itself in that rabbinical garment unless a spark of Moses, our teacher, our master, clothes itself in his soul. Rabbi Yossi said, "All of the things I heard you say, only one of them surprised me. You either said it out of foolishness or because you did not know what you were talking about." "And what was that?" asked the old man. "About the beautiful maiden." The old man began, "The Lord is with me, I do not fear. What can man do to me? I am not afraid to reveal the secrets of the Torah. The Lord is with me to help me. It is better to rely on the Lord. How good and pleasant, cherished and lofty are the words of Torah." The four expressions used here correspond to the four levels of Torah interpretation. called Pardes. How shall I proclaim them in front of rabbis when I have not heard of a single word of Torah from their mouths? Since Rabbi Yossi assumed that the donkey driver was simply a foolish old man, he reviewed his studies to himself in silence. As a result, I am not able to judge whether they are indeed worthy of learning secrets of the Torah. Alternatively, the old man said this out of humility, since the verse states, "Do not stand in the place of great men." He was reluctant to speak at all until the rabbis had spoken first. However, since they had not spoken, and he was about to utter words of Torah, he had nothing to be ashamed of, as far as I am concerned. I must say that I am not ashamed to say words of Torah before all. And this is the words of Rabbi Chaim Vital in the Zohar. From that point on, the attitude of Rabbi Yossi changes as he listens to the words of the old man who begins to reveal secrets of the Torah. That's the end of the section. Does anyone have any questions? Chapter 9.
Okay. Is this Rabbi Yossi Hagilabi? Do we know that?
Say again.
Is this Rabbi Yossi Hagilabi?
No.
It's not. Okay.
Rabbi Yossi Hagilabi is mentioned in the Talmud.
I don't remember, you know, which lesson as to why I did it. I think it had something to do with Passover,
but I just wondered.
Yeah, Rabbi Yossi in the Talmud is 300 years later than when the Zohar was recorded. Chapter 9, Section 1. Reincarnation Discrimination. Men must reincarnate to clear their sins because they study Torah and cannot go to Gehinnom. Whereas women are thus protected by the study of Torah and can purify their sins in Gehinnom. My commentary. In our generation, this may not apply to men and women in the same way. It may apply to people who study Torah and people who do not study Torah. Also in the Talmud, it says that women do not have the mindset to study Torah at the level of Talmud. Yet women are studying this level of Torah. It is my opinion that what represents a male half and a female half of a soul changes from generation to generation. Gilgulim really only apply to men and not to women. This is the esoteric meaning of the verse, "A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains stationary forever." A generation goes and a generation comes refers to men who reincarnate. However, women are referred to as earth. They are forever stationary. In other words, they do not return in reincarnation. And my commentary. In our generation, the verse is actually applied differently. A better translation to understand my comment above is, a generation goes out and a generation comes, and the Malchut of the universe stands forever. There is a certain concept of Malchut that is universal, and it does not change, while the generation can be modified as to where the male and female is put. Although Jewish literature in general and Kabbalah in particular, the earth is considered an aspect and personification of the feminine. Malchut is the preeminent female aspect of the Sephirot, and one of her attributes is earth. Furthermore, the entire section in the Torah concerning illicit sexual relationships is associated with the earth, its settlement and exile from it. For example, it is written, "And you shall guard all my statutes and all my laws in the land that I brought you there to settle, if shall not split." But the actual word is vomit you out. The earth takes the place of the widow who is not marrying the brother-in-law. Similarly, if the brother-in-law does not perform the mitzvah of Yibum, then he and his brother's widow perform the mitzvah of Chalitza. In Chalitza, the earth plays a prominent role. He stamps his foot upon the ground. She throws his shoe upon the ground. And finally, she spits upon the ground. And the Zohar explains that the earth here takes the place of the widow, who is not marrying the brother-in-law to allow the soul of the deceased to come back in Gilgul through her. The Ari has explained the indication from the verse that informs us that men reincarnate and not women. Now he will give a reason for it, and it is the first reason for this distinction that he is providing here. According to the text of the Sefer HaGilgulim and the children of Aaron, B'nai Aharon. The reason is that men are commanded with the mitzvah to get involved with the study of Torah. Therefore, they cannot enter Gehinnom because the fires of Gehinnom cannot affect them. As it says regarding Elisha, son of Abuya, he was not judged because he learned Torah, but they did not give him the world that is coming either, since he had sinned. And this is taught in the Talmud in the portion of Chagiga. And we have already learned about it in chapter 4, verse 7, section 7. We learn that that the Torah protects against the fires of Gehinnom. Therefore, those that learn Torah must reincarnate in order to get purified of their sins. And now we learn Korah must reincarnate in order to get purified of their sins. Now we learn for the same reason only men reincarnate and not women. Thus they, the men, must reincarnate to erase their sins in place of Gehinnom. Women, on the other hand, who are not commanded to be involved with Torah, can enter Gehinnom to erase their sins, and they do not need to reincarnate. That's the end of the section. We could start, but we won't have time to finish the next section, so we'll call the class here. It's just a few minutes. And hopefully people will ask questions. Are there any questions?
I have a question, Malka.
Go ahead, Malka.
I'm just kind of recapping what you said about the women not reincarnating. So basically, we go to Gehinnom, we get purified through for our sins, but our souls do not get reincarnated, right? But if are we in the lower garden or in the until the Messiah comes, basically, the woman's soul. And the next question is, we don't get reincarnated, but if the male needs a soulmate, because we come down with a soulmate, so are we waiting in the garden for the male to attach to the female and come down with the male?
Your questions are excellent. And in order to answer them, I have to give a lot of information. So let me strive to. In our world, it's been documented scientifically that every across the world, there are approximately 50% men and 50% women born every year. But in actuality, there are more men born than women by a few tenths of a percent. And so we have to answer that question in Kabbalah. Why is that so?
Well, so I think that...
Let me finish. I'm giving you information.
Okay.
We have to ask and answer the question in Kabbalah, why is it so? When a woman is born, she comes down with her soulmate, but more than likely she will not meet her soulmate. She will marry someone, and for that lifetime, he may be designated her soulmate, but he is not her cosmic soulmate. But what essentially happens, and this is a metaphor that I'm trying to explain my understanding of this issue. Let's say there is 100 sins that the man incurred in his last lifetime. And the woman incurred whatever she incurred. And they die in the last lifetime. The man does not go to Gate Hinnom because he studied Torah. So he needs to reincarnate. And he has 100 sins to fix, to do tikkun for. The woman, whatever number of sins she committed, she goes to Gehinnom, and she is totally cleansed of all of those sins. And she goes and rests in a place where she is totally elevated because she is pure. She is literally the meaning of a betulah. Meaning of a purified female. She's in the upper garden of Eden. Her soulmate never gets to her. In the upper garden of Eden, men and women are not in the same location. They do match themselves during Friday evening, during the Shabbat. They do come together. But the rest of the week, they are kept separated from each other. Because nominally, she's not studying Torah in the Garden of Eden, while nominally, he is. Now, when the man reincarnates, his soulmate, his female soulmate, has a choice. Will she reincarnate with him or not? Most do, not because they're looking forward to this world, but they're looking forward to the endless, and they want to do the process as quickly as possible. And without them coming into this world, that process is delayed. So the majority of women do choose to come into this world and reincarnate, along with their soulmate. But if they came into this world totally pure, without having done it, having any sins at all, they would not have any affinity at all with these lumps of males with all of this klipot and sins and negativity. There would be no affinity between men and women at all. There is very little affinity between men and women other than the emotional love-lust combination. But there wouldn't be any affinity. They wouldn't have anything in common if the woman did not agree to take upon herself the cleansing of, as an example, 40 of the sins, of the 100 sins that her soulmate husband has to cleanse. So he comes into the world with 60 sins, and she comes into the world with 40 sins. So she is higher spiritually than he, but there's close enough together to have some affinity that will bring them together. But those women who say, you know, I don't want to go down this time, I don't feel like it, that's what represents the small amount of male body, male babies, the small percentage of male babies over the female babies, because not every woman chooses to come into the world. Now you can ask other questions, Malcolm.
So basically, I have a couple questions. Basically, what you just stated, that the woman would take on the 40 sins and the man the 60. So basically, she comes down for his benefit, not so much hers, to help the two soulmates achieve their five levels of soul, the higher levels of soul, together. So she's basically become his helper in cleansing him, not so much her. Is my understanding not correct? Well, or
your answer is yes, you're partially correct. But you have to realize that when she takes on those 40 sins, and remember that's a, you know, metaphor. I'm not, maybe it's more, right, maybe it's less, but we're using that as a way of understanding it. She takes, right, on those 40 sins. They're no longer his. She has accepted them, and she has accepted the responsibility to make tikkun for them. And that explains, into my way of thinking, but I'm not a woman, so it may not be correct, but to my way of thinking, it explains why women who are abused keep going back for more abuse, because they are putting themselves in harm's way to keep giving these men the opportunity to stop, which would correct their problem, which would correct their sin, the male sin.
Right. She's basically the helper.
And in another sense, you can have a woman who comes into the world having accepted the 40 sins of her male counterpart, and now she's involved with a man who has a female soul as part of his tikkun, and so their sexual relationship is so clouded and confused because of that, that the process of the relationship of a man with a female soul and a woman with a female soul, but she is cleansing what her male soulmate did to that female soul in the previous lifetime. So there's a balancing of the process, the balancing of the sins. what I'm describing is very confusing because Tikkun is very confusing.
Right.
It's very simple if you have the perspective of looking down from above. But it's not simple if you're talking about how human beings interact with each other. Because the science world, the psychology, is looking at the interaction of human beings and their relationship on a physical level, truly. They're not looking at it on a spiritual level. And that's the major difference between psychology and Kabbalah.
So basically, you said previously that to see how you worded it, to speed up the
cleansing of the male. That's correct. So let's say a man has 100 sins and he can correct 10 sins a lifetime. So he has 10 lifetimes to go through. But if his soulmate takes on 4 of them, so he's only gonna need to go through 6 lifetimes. That speeds up the process because he doesn't have to go through 20 years of childhood and teenagehood.
Right, but could you look at it from a spiritual level that he is also trying to help speed up the world, the cleansing of the world, the whole human race, and speeding up this male?
Yes, that is correct, and that's also why you have women living longer than men, for that same reason. Because it's women as a more gentle personality will tend to not accumulate as many sins. And therefore they can live longer and they can cleanse more of those 40 sins that they took on.
Right. So if they decide not to come down with their soulmate and they stay because they're purified, their sins of clean are cleansed through the purification of Dehinan, so they tend to not want to come down. So they're just in a separate place, as you said, in the upper garden, waiting for the rest of the human race
They're waiting for their soulmate.
They're waiting for their soulmate
to cleanse what he can cleanse in this lifetime so that the next time when he reincarnates, she might choose to come down.
Okay, so it's on an individual basis, basically, is what you're saying, just for their soulmate.
It's on an individual basis, but that's always related to the macro. The micro is always related to the macro, and the macro is always related to the micro. But the transaction, the correction, is always taking place on the micro level, on the individual's level. But by changing the individual, essentially they change the macro, the overall picture.
So what happens if that woman doesn't want to come down with her soulmate ever? How does that soulmate ever cleanse himself?
He doesn't. He goes through cleansing as much as he can by himself. And she is authorizing other women that he marries to assist him in cleansing as much as they can. But ultimately, in the last lifetime, she has to agree to come down, or that last lifetime will repeat itself over and over because she is the only woman, the only female side of the soul that can motivate him to change that final aspect of what he has to cleanse.
Wow. So it could be forever.
Well, it's not forever because women tend to be, because they're more internal, they're more aware, and they're aware that if they didn't come down that last lifetime, they're just lengthening the process, and that's not the nature of the female.
So what happens is to
speed the process.
So what happens when they do cleanse and correct and they both go up to the higher garden at the same time? They both meet up, although they still separate it.
Well, you have to remember, when the soul comes down, it's separated to male and female, and it's when that's separated, typically the male is born first, and somewhere between 20 years later, the female is, I should even say 60 years, because Jacob was 80 years old when Rachel and Leah were in their early 20s.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But okay. Jacob had a lot of cleansing to do in those first 80 years that the women didn't help him with.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they didn't, but they couldn't. It was his turn to cleanse.
Right.
Well, I think the commandment to multiply is on the male side, not the women, correct? The misspoke for to multiply.
And the reason for that is the fact that she has the choice to come down.
Right.
Now, at the same time that we say the mitzvah is not upon her, she has an innate nurturing nature that she looks at a child and wants one.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's built into her because she is connected to Bina, who is the mother in the context of the Sephirot.
Right.
And so her nurturing nature comes from that essence. And as much as the male sin will fail her, I once dated a woman who, she was 22 years old and she'd already had a tubal ligation. So she did not want to have children. She was so veiled by this. At the time, obviously, I didn't know it. It was many years before I studied Kabbalah. But it's all, when you study reincarnation and then you start to think back over your lifetime, you'll see many relationships that, this is what that, this might have been a cause of that situation. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, because we can never be certain. But to me, it's enjoyable to speculate internally to myself. It's not something you want to spend a whole lot of time talking to other people about.
Right.
We have enough other things to do in this life.
I have one more question. Here we are studying Kabbalah, studying Torah, the students in your class, and it says that the women don't have to study Torah. We choose to study Torah and Kabbalah and anything else that we can get our hands on. So what happens with our souls that we have learned or somewhat learn it in some of these aspects of the Torah and Kabbalah, Zohar, so forth and so on? Is that something that will elevate, not that our souls, I'm not looking for a reward of any sort, I'm just asking the question.
Well, if you have to relate it to the verse in Isaiah that says that the moon will grow to the level of the male, or the level of the sun, and together they will grow seven times. it's essentially describing Malchut elevates to Zeran Pin. And together, Malchut and Zeran Pin grow back into Bina. And isn't that what's happening in this generation? Because if you go back 500 years and we disregard all of the influences of the movies and the westerns and all that stuff we've seen, and we study history, documented history, there weren't a whole lot of women who were going into business. There weren't a whole lot of women who were doing anything but what staying home and getting pregnant and teaching their children to be good people. Because this is the nature of the female at the beginning. This was the nature of Chava. This was the nature of Sarah. This was the nature of Rivka, to help her man and to teach her children. But in our generation, the relationships have changed because of the prophecy. It's not because of the prophecy, but the changes are taking place in order to manifest the prophecy. Most of my students, as you know, are women. And they're studying Torah at levels that their husbands don't study. Because they have a deeper hunger. Where does this deeper hunger come from? It comes from the igniting of the purity of their inner essence that is taking place in this generation that was not true in earlier generations for women.
So basically, we're taking on the light of Bina's vessel when we study the Creator's words.
Well, you're revealing light when you study the Creator's word.
Okay.
You're revealing light that burns the klipot, which is another way of saying the vessel is growing.
All right. Wow, great lesson. Great insight.
Now, I have to caution you. This is my opinion. Most of it I have read in the from my teachers from various locations. But some of it comes from my own thinking. The idea that the souls of this generation split in different locations, that comes from my own thinking. I've never read it anywhere. It makes sense to me. But that doesn't mean that it's the truth. You have to take it with a grain of salt. And maybe you'll find a better explanation. But for right now, this is what makes sense to me. Any other questions from anybody else?
No, sir. I have to go get my grandkids, so I'm going to sign off.
Okay. Well, I think the class is going to sign off that day. Our next class will be a Zohar class tonight at 7 o'clock West Coast time. Shalom to all.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, Donna. Good night, Malta.
Good night.
Good night.